1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
I haven't even had any of my alcoholic drink yet. I'm still a little silly.
Everybody, welcome to Storage Room Movie Boom. I'm Eden.
I'm Sam.
This is the show where two adult siblings talk about movies in their parents' basement.
Yep.
Sure is. Sam Wise, how are you?
I'm good. Last time we recorded, I was sick, but I am no longer sick, but now you are sick.
Sure am. So apologies to everyone if I sound a little funny or I have to clear my throat or cough or be disgusting. So
yeah, what goes around comes around, eh?
Yeah. Oh man, we should get a solid
nice cold bunch of Molson ice.
Oh, Molson icy.
Molson-y.
Oh yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Apologies to our potential Canadian listeners.
Borrow an accent from Canada. that might get cut out. We'll see. This week we're talking about the movie Galaxy Quest. Well, actually, let's talk about what we watched last week. Last week we watched War of the Worlds,
and it was not good.
It was not good. Both of us were pretty hard on it, I would say.
But you know, don't watch the movie, listen to our podcast about it.
Exactly. It's more fun to listen to us talk about it, and yes, it saves you a little bit of time. Yeah, there are far fewer bootcut jeans in this room than there were in that movie.
That's true.
Sam pitched to me at the end of that movie last week, three all aliens movies: Pacific Rim, Mars Attacks, and Galaxy Quest. I chose Galaxy Quest, which is what we'll be talking about this week.
Which was good because I had not seen it prior to yesterday evening.
I am pretty excited that everybody I told that we were watching this was very pumped. There was not a single person that was like, oh, what is that? Or, oh, yeah, whatever that movie. Like, everybody was like, oh, my God, it's so funny.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to get into it. This movie, Galaxy Quest, was released December 25th, 1999. Christmas Day.
Merry Christmas.
Just at the height of Y2K mania.
Oh, yeah.
It's an hour and 42 minutes. The director is Dean Pariseau.
Sure, we'll go with that.
We'll go with that. The writers, David Howard and Robert Gordon. The synopsis from IMDb. The alumni cast of a space opera television series have to play their roles as the real thing when an alien race needs their help. However, they also have to defend both Earth and the alien race from a reptilian warlord. Okay, space opera television series is incorrect.
Yeah, I don't know that I would have ever considered Star Trek a space opera.
Not at all.
It is sci-fi, but space opera seems to me something a bit grander in scope and scale.
It sure does. Yeah, there's nothing operatic about what they're trying to project.
Right.
Yeah. That's a bit of a clunky synopsis, IMDb. Mm-hmm. Reviews on our favorite website, Rotten Tomatoes. Film has an approval rating of 90% based on 126 reviews and with an audience score of 79%.
Yeah, of course, this being one of the movies that is basically pre Rotten Tomatoes, sure, or at least in the modern era. I don't know when they came along.
Yeah.
But the audience score, I imagine at this point, was just done by people who really liked the movie.
Probably, yeah.
And wanted to go on and rate
exactly
it. And then, yeah, just in terms of review, you know, the general critic reviews. I mean, it's always good that it's up there.
I think 79 is a pretty fair rating, I would say.
Yeah.
For this movie, it is very enjoyable. Metacritic gave it 70 out of 100, which is...
It's honestly pretty average, pretty higher end average for them.
For Metacritic. And actually, we've talked about this on several other episodes. I've talked about this and never followed through until this week, which was, we'd kind of wondered, so what are the top rated films on Metacritic? Like, what are the 199 rated movies? Mm-hmm. So, unsurprisingly, here are the top eight: Citizen Kane, Godfather, Rear Window, Casablanca, Boyhood, of all things, the three colored series, Red, Vertigo, and Notorious. So, we've got a bunch of Alfred Hitchcock on here.
Rear Window, Vertigo, Notorious.
Mm-hmm. Citizen Kane, of course, coming in number one, and Godfather, of course, coming in number two. So those are not actually, I was kind of surprised by Rear Window being number three.
I don't know. I've never seen it.
Dude, it is. It is a really good movie. It just doesn't typically appear that high on film lists. Like, I seriously doubt the AFI has ever put Rear Window in the top 10, right. even. Although maybe it is. I could be talking out of my ass on that one. I do have a cold.
I don't know.
And
we'll
I'm
blame
drinking
it on
whiskey.
The, yeah. We'll blame it on the booze.
Yeah, blame it on the booze. Okay, the cast for this movie. Let's just say Tim Allen.
That's basically what I did throughout my entire notes. I just wrote the actors' names because
yeah.
like they were great characters, but I'm like, oh, you're Tony Shalhoub or you're Sigourney Weaver.
You're 100% right. And I don't even know why I even put
it. It worked.
Okay, so if anybody's interested in their character names, I'll let you do the fucking work on this one. We've got Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, Alan Rickman, Tony Shalhoub, Sam Rockwell, Daryl Mitchell, Enrico Colantoni, Robin Sachs, Patrick Breen, Missy Pyle, Jed Reese, Justin Long in his first appearance, mm-hmm. and Rainn Wilson also in his first appearance.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, a lot of people. It's a big cast.
Yeah, it
I
is.
I mean, our core cast being Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, Alan Rickman, Tony Shalhoub, Sam Rockwell, and Daryl Mitchell. And then Enrico Colantoni is the head alien guy.
Yes.
Very charming, I felt.
Yeah.
Okay, some of our miscellany. Galaxy Quest was the feature film debut for both Justin Long and Rainn Wilson, as I mentioned. The scene where Tim Allen is in a men's restroom overhearing how the cast of Galaxy Quest are nobodies and that all the co-stars can't stand him mirrors an actual event in William Shatner's life. He discovered the exact same thing about himself when he attended a convention in 1986.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, that doesn't really surprise me, I guess.
Shit talking at a convention, for sure.
Of course.
It's got to happen. So director Dean Pariseau and star Tim Allen have revealed in interviews that the original tone of the film was much darker, with more scenes of violence. But after test screening, the film was recut to emphasize the comedy and obtain a PG rating.
I can agree with that choice, honestly.
I think that is the better choice, mm-hmm. for sure. Well, it also, I mean, there's so many jokes that seem very intentional. Like, this makes it sound like they just cut what footage they had into a comedy. Like,
right.
there's a lot of intentional jokes in here. I mean, like, mostly Sigourney Weaver's boobs. I mean,
yeah, there is a bit that we'll get into later regarding her boobs where you're like, okay, there's a scene missing.
Yeah. Okay. We'll get into it. The film was one of the earliest to have its own internet domain and website, galaxyquest.com. Now you can look at that on the Wayback Archive. However, rather than being a polished part of the film's marketing campaign, the site, in keeping with the film's fandom theme, was deliberately designed to look like a fan page with screen captures and poor HTML coding.
That's really clever.
Really clever. I mean, that's great fucking marketing.
Yeah, there's a lot of clever stuff about this movie.
Totally. Like I said, everybody that I told that we watched this, everybody was excited. People love this movie.
Yeah.
Which is not surprising with the 90%. I mean, although, like you said, there's probably people that already liked the movie that were retroactively mm-hmm. reporting on it. Sam Rockwell based his portrayal on Bill Paxton's performance in the James Cameron classic Aliens. In particular, his elevated fear of being killed and his mental collapse upon seeing a motion detector that shows their enemy closing in on them.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
I mean, he was very much the Star Trek red shirt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the character that was basically, he would go on an away mission
yep.
just to die to up the stakes.
Yeah. So actually, let me find that. Hold on. There was another bit of information. So the character that Sam Rockwell played, Guy Fleegman, was an intentional homage to a very busy Star Trek Next Generation actor, Guy Vardaman, who not only portrayed several no-name extras in the series, but also served as a stunt slash stand-in double for Brent Spiner and Will Wheaton. His reaction to the homage was, quote, "I just about fell out of my chair," end quote, having forgotten that being told that the character would appear in the film someday.
Nice. Yeah. I even looked up his, you know, picture and stuff. I remember seeing him in some Next Gen episodes.
That's awesome. Okay. Here's a bit of information that I found was interesting. I only noticed in the very opening scene, but in theaters, the first 20 minutes of the film were presented in a 1:85:1 widescreen image. It changes aspect ratios.
Did it do that in the version that we watched? I watched it just on Amazon.
I watched it on Amazon as well. It did at the beginning, but it did at the beginning. It was basically in 4:3 because it was showing like their TV show.
Right. Yeah, I got
and
that.
And then it went back to widescreen. But it also, there was a point at which it said in the first 20 minutes, it was in one widescreen image. And then it goes into 2:35:1, an even wider image.
Hmm.
So
they must have changed that for these, you know, streaming.
They
and so
must
on.
Have, because there's another bit of information talking about how theaters were not aware of this. So they had it set for the previous widescreen setting mm-hmm. for 1:85. And then when it changed, it obviously would spread into the walls beyond it right. because it was too wide. And then the director later admitted that the aspect ratio shift was, quote, a terrible idea.
I mean, I get it because you are definitely taking those characters that is this is their worldview and expanding it. So it's novel, but a little more transparency towards the theater owners probably would have been a good idea.
Totally. Yeah. It said that like later on, eventually they were like sending notes along with the reels to be like, yo, this is going to happen. Heads up.
Mm-hmm.
Also, just a fun note. This is our second movie that we have watched. This had a lot of aspect ratio changes. The first being Life of Pi.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Harold Ramis originally was cast as the director on this.
Hmm.
He originally wanted Alec Baldwin for the lead, which he turned down.
That would have been not good. I'm sorry.
Yeah, maybe not 1999 Alec Baldwin.
Right.
I think he really like when he got into like 30 Rock zone, I think he really like his comedic chops kind of developed over those years. So maybe older Alec Baldwin would have been a good comedic lead. Steve Martin and Kevin Kline were both considered, although Kline turned it down for family reasons. I think Kevin Kline would have been a great lead actor in this.
I can agree with that.
I think that would have been awesome. But so when Tim Allen was ultimately cast, Ramis left the project. He was like, fucking peace. But after seeing the film, Ramis said he was ultimately impressed by Allen's performance.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Because, I mean, he was still doing Home Improvement at this time. So you're thinking he's going to be a certain type of character. And he definitely is a lot better than you would suspect.
Absolutely. It did take me a little bit to forget who I was looking at because he's just so identifiable with that one character from TV. Right. Like Tim the Toolman Taylor. Mm-hmm. And so it did take me a little bit to kind of like get past that. But I think he did a good job.
I did. He did a very good job.
Yeah. The character of Lariari. Lalariari, the only female alien that we're helping was the first main role for Missy Pyle. And her role was significantly expanded after producers noticed, oh, wait a second. We only have one female character in this whole movie. Sigourney Weaver.
Yep.
I guess we should extend her character a little bit more, which they did barely.
Yeah, it's not much there, but it's fine, I guess. I mean,
It's not like
the movie is a 3 hour long epic and you're just looking at a bunch of dudes and it moves at a brisk pace.
It doesn't, but it is true. It's like,
I agree.
I mean, Sigourney Weaver is one of the main characters and she's also played for a joke often. But most of the characters are, I will say that,
right.
You know,
I mean, Tony Shalhoub, his entire, you know, shtick, which he's probably, gosh, he may be MVP. I don't know.
Pretty fucking
he's
good.
He's really good.
Okay. So we've got the main characters at the end of this. That'll be our top six.
Okay.
Is it six? One, two, three, four, five, six. Yep. Top six. So we'll do our top six at the end of this. The evil warlords, the big bad in this is a character named Saris, who is named for notorious film critic Andrew Saris, which I think is funny because I'm like, I don't know. Andrew Saris is just it's a very famous film critic. You learn about him when you take film classes. Right. Like he's basically the author of the auteur theory and a big proponent of it. So very important to film theory and film criticism. So I think it's funny that whoever wrote this was like, you know what? Fuck that Saris guy.
Yeah, it's always weird when the film, you know, directors and so on put film critics into their movies.
Yeah,
it just seems a little self-serving, maybe.
Yeah, but you're like, you're kind of giving them what you want. You're now giving them more attention.
Right. Like in the Roland Emmerich Godzilla movie from 98, I think he basically put Siskel and Ebert inserts into that one and obviously made them look stupid.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Get over it. Somebody doesn't like your movie, whatever.
Or the, what was that? Lady in the Water, the End Night Shyamalan movie where they have the one film critic and he's like an obnoxious douchebag and he gets eaten by a monster. That movie sucked.
I did not see it. Speaking of having a renaissance, M. Night Shyamalan is like strangely come back a little bit.
What's he doing?
Well,
I'm not paying attention.
He had Glass and Split.
Right.
That were both received well. And then he's got a new one coming out. Shit.
Oh, Old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've heard mixed reviews, but feels very Shyamalan-esque.
Can't be any worse than The Happening. So, you know,
was it the one about wind or grass or something?
Oh, it was the one where the plants are releasing pheromones that cause people to kill themselves.
That's right.
And there's this one scene of Marky Mark trying to outrun the wind. It's so bad.
And he thought he could do it, didn't he?
I know. He thought he had the most serious look on his face. You know, said, "Where do your mother?" and tried to run out, you know,
outrun
the wind.
That is fucking hilarious. Tried to outrun the wind.
That movie's so stupid.
Wow.
Don't make me watch that.
No, I would never. I actually forgot that existed. So acclaimed writer and director David Mamet, in his book, Bambi versus Godzilla, : On the Nature, Purpose and Practice of the Movie Business, he included Galaxy Quest in a list of four perfect films. The other perfect films being The Godfather, A Place in the Sun, and Dodsworth. I'm like, Galaxy Quest.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's certainly, it's probably the best version of this type of movie.
Agreed. Agreed. It's really good. That actually reminds me, if you listen to any recent discussions with Tarantino, he's got some favorite movies that are off the goddamn wall.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised.
So, well, but I don't mean like weird, like niche B movies. I mean, like just movies that you would be like, why did he select that? There, his, one of his favorite movies is a Tony Scott movie. The one about the train, the runaway train with Denzel.
Oh yeah. And Chris Pine and Rosario Dawson. Yes. Yeah. I don't remember the name of it, but
I watched that movie because in everything, I was like, okay, Tony Scott, Denzel, Chris Pine, right. Runaway Trains. Sounds fucking great. So incredibly boring. So incredibly boring. It's the same rounded camera shot that swings from one side of the train to the other for 2 hours.
Ooh.
So I don't know what Tarantino sees in it. So hot takes from Tarantino on movies.
I guess so. I mean, he's got nothing to prove to anybody, right? Who cares?
Yeah, he can have shitty taste all day long.
Yeah.
Let's end on this. I feel like this is a good place to mention this. So Daryl Mitchell, who plays in this movie, Tommy Weber, who is a child actor at the beginning of the, or in the show within the movie. And then he's an adult actor as we see them in the present time of the movie.
He's basically the Will Wheaton insert.
Correct.
In this analogy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So on November 10th, 2001, he was paralyzed from the waist down in a motorcycle crash in South Carolina, in which he lost track of his bike after turning a corner and encountering gravel and loose pavement. He woke up 5 days later in the hospital. He got a lot of support from his friends and family, of course, including Denzel Washington and Chris Tucker. He had had a recurring role on the TV program Ed between 2002 and 2004. And he also was in one of the, I believe it was NCIS New Orleans or something like that. It's one of those procedurals. That's,
right.
I remember New Orleans being in it. But so he's continued to work. He also started a foundation for awareness for spinal cord injury and has served as the minority outreach spokesman for the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation. He's also a very strong advocate for employing actors with disabilities. And he currently resides in Sugar Hill, Georgia, which I think is cool. His kids go to North Gwinnett High School.
Oh, well, what do you know? I always loved him on the John Larroquette show. Amazing. I remember watching that all the time.
So good. And he's so charming. And that's a very terrible thing to happen. But I am glad that he's continued to have a very successful career.
That's
what it sounds like. Amazing. Just one last little bit of nerd information for myself and any other architecture idiots out there. The house that Tim Allen lives in the movie, the glass house,
yes,
that's on
the highfalutin mansion.
So that's it's called the Stahl House. It was built in 1960 as a part of the case study program, where all of these architects built all of these case study homes all over the country. And so it's super famous. You would recognize it. I'm sure you've probably seen it in a million movies.
It looked familiar.
It always feels like it's like a bad guy type of like hideout. So it was kind of surprising that they put it in this, actually. I was kind of like, huh, that feels like, It didn't make sense to me for him being kind of a washed up actor has been to have such an identifiable house.
Especially when, as we'll see, there is a great discrepancy between everyone's living arrangements in terms of the cast members.
For sure. For sure. Peek behind the curtain. We were going to record this episode last week and we had to reschedule. So I haven't watched it in a week, but I was looking back through my notes and the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th bullet point down just says her boobs. They do play a big part in this movie.
That is true.
So our personal experiences with this, you had not seen this.
Correct.
I'd seen this ages ago. Remember enjoying it, but didn't remember a lot of the specifics about it, but definitely remember thinking, and again, this returned to me watching it again this time, is that I'm not a big enough Star Trek fan and I don't have enough knowledge inherently of the Star Trek world to kind of probably pick up on some of the homage and notes that they're referencing, but doesn't mean it was any less enjoyable. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I am definitely a huge Star Trek person. At least if we're going to go really down the rabbit hole, there's a bit of a split in Star Trek fandom between more fans of the original series, which this is largely taking inspiration from, and then Next Generation.
Yeah.
And the 90s series, basically.
Well, because we watched Next Gen. The whole family did.
So
and I remember that.
Of that latter generation.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if the stuff they're making now is going to spawn its own generation, which would be too bad because I hate new Star Trek. I think it's bad.
All of them. There have been so many iterations, I feel like.
Yeah, the new stuff is just, I tried watching Discovery. It was horrible. I watched the first season of Picard. It was
horrible.
Could
you name all of the iterations after Next Gen?
All the series?
Yeah. There are so many.
I mean, there was Next Gen. There was Deep Space Nine. There was Voyager. There was Enterprise. Uh-huh. They kind of wrapped up that era of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they had the three J.J. Abrams movies.
Yeah, I saw those.
Then we had Discovery was the most recent series. Uh-huh. Then you've had Picard.
Sure.
You've got the animated one, Lower Decks. I think there's another one called Prodigy that is coming out sometime
soon. Lower Deck is supposed to be hilarious.
It's supposed to be, but I hate everything else. New Star Trek. So I don't have CBS All Access or whatever it's called.
Okay.
Paramount Plus. Mm-hmm. Sorry. My branding is about a year behind. I think that's it for the newer stuff.
What was the series that had, I cannot, Kate as the,
Kate Mulgrew, that was Voyager. Voyager's good.
Yeah, she's fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a super successful actress. If anybody has watched her in anything recently, it was probably Orange is the New Black.
Yep,
she plays a character called Red.
That.
Yeah, she's fucking awesome.
Yeah, just being a Star Trek fan, I was definitely more sensitive to it. But it was a lot. There were a lot of people that would have made this a lot more condescending and really mean-spirited.
Yeah.
This is not that. Even in the beginning when they are showing that, you know, times are not great for this group of people and they're kind of almost, I don't want to say miserable or regretful, but they're not crazy about the situation they're in, especially Alan Rickman's character.
Sure.
It doesn't feel... Like I said, well, just mean spirited. It does not feel that way at all.
Correct. And actually, I didn't put it in the notes, but I did read some. There was a significant number of quotes from like the Next Gen cast or from Shatner, whoever, reviewing this, and everybody, all of those guys, and maybe some of them are just being nice, but they didn't have to be. But a lot of them fucking loved it, and especially I remember the one from Will Wheaton. Will Wheaton was like, I love this. And it really represents fandom in a way, because he's such a huge fanboy of everything, you know? So like he like really appreciated that aspect of it, which I really liked that this movie truly does to me feel kind of 50-50, even though it's maybe it could be 75-25 fandom to homage to a series versus homage to a series. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But I liked that there was that aspect to it. The Justin Long character is so cute, so charming. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
He did
a very good job.
It's
and again, it didn't feel like you have the obvious jokes when you are talking about a character like that, but he didn't seem like, just talking about if there was a meaner group of people behind this movie, Justin Long's character would have been about 15 years older, probably overweight, probably a little misogynistic, but he's not. He's just a younger kid, probably a teenager, just really enthusiastic about what he enjoys and just goes with it.
Just loves the world and everything about it and is so in depth about it and turns out saves the day.
Exactly.
Which is great. This reminded me, this idea of really loving comic conventions and just fandom and that whole world is Alan Tudyk made a show called Con Man about a guy who's an actor that goes to conventions all the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I love Alan Tudyk. He's great. for anybody that's a fan of the show Firefly. Well, he's got a new one on Sci-Fi where he's like an alien doctor or something like that.
I have no idea.
He's great.
Do you want me to drop a hot take right now?
You don't like... Oh, I know you don't like Firefly.
Right. I can see why they canceled it.
Guys, I'm sick, so I'm not going to flip this table, but I may flip my laptop because fuck you. You haven't watched all of them.
Yeah, I know. I watched like half the series. It's only what, 12, 13 episodes?
Yes. And
I watched like six of them and I'm like, sorry, I don't like this.
Listen, I'm with you. Like the pilot is 2 hours. What was he fucking thinking?
It also looked cheap.
Was cheap.
Well, I mean, in terms of other
TV. Go back and watch
Buffy.
I mean, like that shit looks like it was made on a goddamn dime.
Well, that was like 5 years even before Firefly.
Yeah,
and it looks better than Firefly.
I don't know if it looks better than Firefly. I don't think you could say that.
I mean, well, I guess they're going for totally different feels, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Buffy is going for then modern teenage aesthetic.
Right.
Whereas that was going for sci-fi, but I didn't care for it.
Well, I will say this. The pilot didn't grab me. I mean, I love Nathan Fillion to death. The pilot didn't really grab me. I started watching it. It really was the latter part of the only 13 episodes they make. They made some really fucking amazing episodes. So like... I don't know. If I were you, I would give it a chance. I know there's a million other things to watch,
I'm probably not going to go back to it.
Well, I will say this. I do believe you are incorrect and that you should quit the show right now.
Well, okay. Bye.
Let me fill this.
Anyway, that was a bad attempt at footsteps.
Yeah, we need some like two pieces of wood in here.
Yeah, exactly. I need coconuts.
That would be great. I'm surprised we don't have shit like that in this room, actually. There's got to be something weird in here we could knock together.
We're in the storage room. We could find something to slap together some sound effects. Anyway,
for sure. There's all sorts of weird stuff
we'll have to do some research. Anyway, right. This whole tangent is probably going to end up in a clip show.
Yeah, I'll clip. Yeah, exactly. Clip show.
But anyway, we start at a convention.
We start at a convention.
Everyone's there, but Tim Allen's character, I'm sorry. We actually start with them showing the footage of the original show, which is, it's all very good.
It's
it's very cute Star Trek homage. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like we mentioned earlier, it's in like a 4:3 block aspect ratio.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
This very cheap looking, 60s-esque era effects. Mm-hmm. It's all very, very charming.
It is. And you're right. It cuts to a convention where the majority of the cast, everyone except for Tim Allen, is waiting on him.
He's the Shatner.
He's now sidebar.
Well, sidebar.
It's not really a sidebar. I guess it has to do with this. But I mean, I know as much as like I know about Shatner, but was he a diva on Star Trek?
Oh, his ego is pretty notorious.
Okay, got it.
Yeah,
I don't know
a lot of things. Not even just Star Trek, just in general. He's known as having a pretty big head.
Got it. So this makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Okay, that's good to know.
This is probably one of the more on the nose, comparisons or, parallels they're drawing here.
Excellent. Well, that's good to know. So I'm going to ask a lot of questions like that, because like I said, there's a lot of things that you could identify as a layman watching it that I was like, I know that's something I should know, but I don't know.
Yeah. And there are some things that I know like that. And since not being as much of an original series guy, I don't know all of the back behind the scenes, trivia or anything like that. But I will tell you what I do know.
Perfect. Thank you. So like I said, we're at this convention and this is where we're introduced to all of the characters, at least lightly. We see then Alan Rickman, who I love so much.
Mm-hmm.
Pour one out for fucking Alan Rickman, RIP. God damn it. He's awesome. And he's a grumpy dude. He doesn't like his life. He doesn't like that he's been, harnessed and like typecast into this character. He doesn't like that he has to say the same catchphrase all the time.
Yeah.
He used to be a theater. It's Shakespearean.
He's the Leonard Nimoy.
Exactly. And he plays it perfectly.
Yeah.
So good. So charming.
If you're going to have someone play a Leonard Nimoy parallel, it's Alan Rickman.
He did an amazing job. Amazing job. We've got Sigourney Weaver, who is also, she's a little salty. She kind of feels the same way, but she also has moments of tenderness where she's like, well, let's consider the other side. She seems a little more.
Right. You hate to say she's the mom of the group just because she's the only girl, but she kind of is.
She does. She has that more simply because I think a lot of the other male characters, not really Tony Shalhoub, he's out in fucking literally in outer space by himself.
Yeah.
But she does seem to be the person that's kind of trying to bridge the gap, right? Mm-hmm. Where she's like, she's not all happy go lucky. She definitely appreciates that the fact is it's very shitty that Tim Allen isn't there, but she can be swayed because she's got a heart.
Yeah.
Underneath those boobs that they show a lot.
I mean, I wasn't complaining, but
say, man, she looks fucking great in this.
The one thing, though, I don't like her as a blonde. I know it's the late 90s and bleach blonde is the thing, but I prefer her as a brunette.
I did actually. Oh, I agree with you 100%. And I did read a quote from her that said while she was making this, she was like, it was very easy to get into character because she's like, the second I put on that blonde wig, I felt 10 IQ points dumber. And I was like, ooh. Sick burn.
Well, that was a good wig job. I thought it was a dye job, but if it was a wig, then that was a good job for the makeup
looks,
people.
I mean, like she's still a beautiful woman no matter what.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I like her as a brunette better, but I think that she's just a great actress and she fucking killed it in this. I wrote down, wow, Tim the Tool Man is really doing it because he shows up. Is he hungover at this part or later?
That's later.
Mm-hmm. He's just a schmuck when he shows up.
Exactly. He's he realizes that everyone's kind of got their routine for one of these things. Rickman goes into a, depressed, self-loathing diatribe.
Yes.
And everyone else is just kind of doing their thing. So he's basically ribbing everybody before they go out there and soak in the adulation, as it were.
Right.
At this convention. And of course, he's the star. So he gets all the attention.
Absolutely. So eventually he shows up and eventually they go out on stage and he gets all the accolades. He stands at the front. They stand at the back.
Yep.
Sam Rockwell is introduced as our extra, our featured extra that is also kind of moderating this panel, I would say. And he, I don't know how I feel about Sam Rockwell in this movie. It was before Sam Rockwell, I think, got real good.
It was before he was, before Sam Rockwell was Sam Rockwell.
Exactly. Exactly. And he, you could see hints of him.
Yes.
Hints of what he would become. He's not terrible in this at all.
No.
But just some of it, I was like, oh, he's figuring it out. He's working it out. He's about to be Sam Rockwell. He's about to be. There's an interaction between Sigourney Weaver and Tim Allen where I think he's macking on her or something like that. And she, oh yeah, he's like, Tim Allen's being very cute in the line where somebody is signing stuff or he's signing stuff for somebody. She kind of looks over and smiles at him because he's really good with like, it was with kids or something like that. And he comes over and he's like kind of macking on her. And it's like, what's up, girl? And she's like, that whole act was cute when I didn't know you. And I was like, ooh, sick burn. Real good.
Oh, yeah. So
somebody says the R word I wrote down. I don't remember who it was. But that doesn't surprise me for 1999.
Oh, yeah. There was one of the douchebags in the bathroom.
Okay,
scene.
Got it.
That was still part of quote unquote accepted parlance, especially, you know, at that point in time.
Right, exactly.
It took me a minute to figure out what you're talking about, but I got it.
Yeah, so there's the scene where, as we mentioned earlier, the reference to thing that actually happened to William Shatner, where he goes into the bathroom, he's in a stall, and so he hears some guys like talking shit about him. You know, they're washed up, they're has-beens, blah, 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 whatever. Right. And so I guess that's enough to bring him down. And he feels really fucking bummed because I guess he thought he was a fucking rock star.
Yeah, he snaps at Justin Long, who comes up a few minutes later asking him just very nerdy questions, which is what you do at conventions.
Sure.
Tim Allen snaps at him and walks off and walks as he's leaving the stage. He runs into our actual aliens,
yes,
who look like four super pale 80s. Oh gosh, what's the word I'm looking for here? Just like alternate 80s, like pop bands or something like that, like Devo almost.
Yes, if they're like an art rock band.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they've got a very peculiar manner of speaking. I don't even know that I can recreate it.
It's very strange. All of their enunciations are very weird. So Enrico, what did I say his name was? Shit. So let me scroll back.
Enrico Iglesias.
Enrico Colantoni.
Yes.
Is our main guy. Malthazar is our main alien. So apparently when he came in, and I don't know if it was after he had already gotten hired or if it was during his audition, but his performance and delivery of these lines and the weird mannerisms and the way he carried himself, the director and the casting director and everybody was like, that's it. And so when they were auditioning the other aliens, they were like,
do what he did.
Yeah, basically they were like, we already have the formula, we just need you to do this, like the way that they walk with their arms swinging the same as their legs.
Yeah, because I mean, spoiler warning, they're octopus people.
Fucking amazing. It's great. I love the weird little things where like they kind of smile awkwardly always with like their jaw kind of like tucked back.
Yeah,
so
they
like,
don't move their necks a lot. No. It's very, you know, just them emulating a humanoid, you know,
and
pattern.
It's great. Yeah. I thought it was great. It was a wonderful, I mean, as an actor, that must be really fun to be like, okay, find out the weirdest thing you can do on how to portray a normal activity.
Right.
You know, and they just fucking nailed it. I thought it was great. So you're right. They run into these guys. He just thinks that they're weird guys that are like, oh yeah, they mentioned something about him meeting up with him. And he goes, oh yeah, that's the gig tomorrow. Right.
Yep.
So he thinks that they're another convention, another gig that he's got something or other.
Mm-hmm. So he goes home. There's a call between Alan Rickman and Sigourney Weaver. I forget exactly what they're talking about. Probably
talking about the day and like how shitty it was. Well, they also were saying that the next morning they're supposed to be at that
electronics store.
Yeah, the electronics store. So they were talking about that. But this is where you were talking about, you see the vast disparity in the living situations.
Yeah, Alan Rickman's living basically in just like a hole in the wall apartment.
Yeah.
And Sigourney Weaver's is a little bit nicer than that. It's still, you know, a reasonable apartment. And then, of course, Tim Allen's got the big fancy house in Malibu.
The stall house. Yeah, exactly. I mean, a super fucking famous house. Like I said, that took me out of it just a little bit because that house is very famous. Even if you weren't aware of like the case study homes. Even if you weren't aware of that, it's recognizable from a million movies and it's always shown as like swanky, chic, expensive, or the bad guy or like James Bond type of character.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got fucking Tim Allen in there.
Yeah. Watching old, essentially Star Trek episodes on TV, getting drunk in his living room.
Yeah. Wild. So he wakes up the next morning, hungover as balls.
Yeah. And again, there are other movies that would have gotten raunchier or more extreme with this, but this one's very tame.
No, I thought it was tame. And I actually thought for a second, I was like, this is the first moment. I think those previous scenes, while being short, I was like, oh, we're looking at Tim Allen.
Yeah.
But this, when he was just like, he portrayed a hangover, the way that I have experienced it in the past, where I was like, yeah, he's having the worst day of his life. Like, this is terrible. So he sold me on it very well. So our real aliens, our weird guy aliens, come up to the door. They come in. He's like, oh, yeah, I guess we're going to the gig. And they were like, we procured the limousine that you requested.
Yeah, it's better than I could have done. I love it.
It's something similar to that, right?
Yeah, it's just very drawn out. It's almost like a pattern of like very quick bursts of language and then it's drawn out vowel sound.
It's kind of melodic in a weird way. Right. Yeah.
I mean, basically he's like struggling to get dressed and he gets dressed and they're driving in the limousine and they're trying to brief him on their situation. He's obviously thinking that it's just like some sort of fan or, you know, a paying gig.
Right.
He shows up, says a couple lines and moves on, what have you.
Yep.
He hits on, what's her name? The other girl.
Missy Pyle.
Thank you. And apparently her translator's not working. So she just like screams at him. In this weird
it's great. In the screeching, insane noise. She's so fucking funny. I love Missy Pyle. I think she's awesome. It was great to see her. Like, I remembered that she was in this actually, having not watched it in a very long time.
They're driving along, but they pull into an alley
and then the
limousine gets basically sucked up into their ship.
Yeah, because I'm curious how
they actually afforded the limo. Did they just like steal it? Or like who was driving?
That was like a limo from 1989. Did you see it? It was like old school.
I wasn't paying attention that much.
It was very square. I'll say that.
Oh, well,
excuse me. Rectangular.
Sorry. Yes, it was stretched.
No.
They show up. He wakes up from being passed out, I guess. I forget exactly how he passes out, but he does.
So they introduce him. He's looking around. He's like, oh, this like set looks pretty rad, whatever. Yeah. And so they get up to the bridge and he's like, oh, OK, this is like normally he's got the line where he's like, normally it's cardboard pieces in a garage or something like that. So he gets up there and on the screen in front of them is where we see our bad guy, Saris, whatever.
Great, wonderful. Practical effects for basically all the aliens in this movie. I
agree, love it. 100%. I did not look it up, but I also didn't see in the notes that it would have been Muppet Show.
Jim Henson.
I don't know
if it was them or I don't know who it was.
Maybe Stan Winston or something like that.
Exactly. Maybe.
Yeah.
It was really good though.
Really good. So yeah, he looks like a giant bug essentially.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he's a bad guy. He's like really selling it with that voice. It's like such like it felt almost like watching a cartoon. His voice really insinuated that sort of bad guy that talks like this.
I mean, he's exactly the character you would have seen in an old school Star Trek.
Absolutely.
The aliens are aliens. What are they called? The
Themodians.
Themodians. That he has to negotiate, you know, with Saris to basically get their, you know, grease out or bacon out of the fire, whatever term you want to use. Yeah. They're in trouble.
Yeah.
They're trying to get him to talk them out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Tim Allen just thinks they're screwing around.
Yes.
Just says a couple things, has them like shoot to their ship, I guess.
Yeah.
And then he just like walks off and goes back.
Yeah,
to
he
their,
like talks shit to the bug and then goes, I don't know, fire in their ship or whatever.
Yeah, you
know?
He's like, shoot these and shoot that and call it a day. All right, we'll get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So they shoot him back to Earth, but it's a very interesting way of doing it.
Yes.
So he's in the room and it's not like in Star Trek where they just teleport you and you go.
Correct.
Though there is a bit on that later. It's like he's standing on this lit up platform and then this, it looks like a liquid almost.
Yes.
It basically rises up and encompasses his body.
Yep.
He can still breathe, but it protects him from the rigors of space because they open up the outside of the ship and he gets this big wide shot of the other side of the galaxy or wherever they are.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of got this look on his face like, oh crap, what's actually going on here? Because he's still hungover.
Yeah.
And then it just like shoots him into this black hole and then he arrives at his house just like shaking and in disbelief.
That's right.
And then, yeah, basically at that point, he just buys it. He's like, okay, I actually did this.
So not to negate any of the science of this.
No, of course not. No.
I mean, even if he could have been protected by some sort of goo that would have saved him from the rigors of space, as you said.
Yeah.
But if he went through a black hole, he would have been put through a process called spaghettification where it stretches him out infinitely.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it would not have been good.
Yeah. So the funny thing about them going through black holes, I was kind of like, I mean, honestly, I bought everything except for that.
Yeah. If they had had some sort of techno babble or device that they had mentioned, yeah, that could have, you know, you could have like hand waved it with a couple lines of dialogue. Right. But
I mean, I guess perhaps they were like, we need something that is very kinetic and mobile for him to realize, oh shit, this is where I'm at.
Like, yeah,
maybe somehow if he was just teleported, he would have convinced himself that he blacked out or something otherwise.
That's true.
Yeah. So maybe that's why, because that same experience also happens to the rest of the crew later. Mm-hmm. So we're back on Earth and we're at the electronic superstore where our poor crew is
so, it's just
out of ribbon cutting for like the shittiest superstore that's ever been made.
Yeah, it's like a Fry's Electronics Mart.
Yeah, if Fry's wasn't popular at all.
And oh, no, like, no, sorry. Brands Mart. That's Brands the one. It's a really low rent, massive electronics store.
And there's like tops 20 people there.
Yeah.
And poor Alan Rickman has to say his line, by Grabthar's hammer, I will avenge you.
Or you will be avenged.
You will be avenged. My bad. I fucked it up.
Yeah, jeez, come on. you had one job.
I had one job. But he says, by Grabthar's hammer, I open the store or something like that. It's
or
like,
I've never saved as much money or something like that. It's so bad.
It's so bad. And he is hating his life.
Yes.
You know, they're all just kind of like fucking bummed. They don't want to be there, except for Tony Shalhoub that we haven't really talked about. So,
because the movie kind of skims over him until a little bit later.
Exactly.
Like he's there and you think he's just kind of chilling.
So character wise, we've described Alan Rickman. He's very sour that this is his life, that that's the gig that he's been known for, that that's his performance. He's a Shakespearean actor. Mm-hmm. He, you know, blah, blah, blah. Sigourney Weaver is like, yeah, it's a fucking bummer that we're here, but let's try and make the best of it or whatever. Mm-hmm. At least we're all together. Daryl Mitchell is kind of like, okay, I'm here. We got this. Whatever. Let's just do it. Tony Shalhoub is legitimately just the spaciest fucking human that's ever existed.
Absolutely.
And he plays it so fucking well.
He does.
So good. I mean, we all knew that that man was a tremendous actor.
Yeah, this is our second movie watching a Wings alum.
That's right.
So that's a recurring theme. We're going to have a mini-series based on Wings alums.
Okay, we got to put something with Steven Weber and with Tim Daly
and
whatever blonde woman's name is.
The redhead was...
Is her hair red?
No, there's two of them.
Oh,
though.
Yeah, then the older woman.
Yeah. She was in Men in Tights. Robin and Men in Tights.
Okay, we'll pitch it.
Well, you were pitching this week.
I am pitching this week. I didn't pitch that. Heads up.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
But
anyway, diatribe over. So second Wings alum, he's great. Just totally melts into this laid back borderline stoner, you know.
He's just
role.
Like, whatever, man. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
He's so great. He's got this cool squint that he does.
Exactly.
It is so wonderful. He's such he's a classic character actor. B, he's so physical. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he won many accolades as portraying the character of Monk on that TV show for a very long time. I'm just a huge fan of like true character actors and somebody that can lose himself in a role that is unlike themselves.
Right.
If it comes down to it, I'm never going to pick Jennifer Aniston over, you know, over Tony Shalhoub. Like,
right.
I'm never going to do it. Jennifer Aniston is very charming. But she always plays Jennifer Aniston.
Right.
You know, so I was glad to see he was really working it in this. The aliens show up here. No, wait.
Tim Allen shows up first saying, guys, I was on an alien spaceship. This crap's crazy. You know, he's trying to convince them and they're like, dude, just you were late. What the hell are you even doing here?
Right.
Like, you shouldn't even bother to show up. And then the group of aliens shows up again and he's like, it's these guys. It's these guys right here. And I forget how exactly they are convinced to go with him.
Well, they I don't know, but Tim Allen tries to convince his crew of his actors and they're kind of like, meh, whatever. And then they're like, there is kind of a all for one and one for all sort of mentality that goes along with it, where they're like, fine, we'll go to this gig with you because they think he's fucking wild. So they're inside the store, the back of house of the store or whatever, and kind of walk into the back. And that's where you see Missy Pyle, who is a hologram at that moment and is like, oh, we kept the transportation lines open just in case you guys might appear. And so they're like, what? And then you see the circles appear underneath their feet and they're also covered in goo.
Mm-hmm.
And shot up to the spaceship.
Yep.
All of them. And they get
there. Including Sam Rockwell, who just kind of bummed along.
Yeah, because he's like, I want to fucking roll with you guys. See, now I wish I didn't pitch. I've already pitched previously Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah.
So that he is classic fucking Rockwell. Oh, in that.
Okay.
All he also right. plays an alien in that. So that's nice. Not even a spoiler. That's just part of it. So they get to the ship and they're all shocked. They're like, fucking, what is this? Except for Tony Shalhoub, who's just like, what up?
Well, it's like they all get there. Shalhoub's not there yet. Yeah. He was a little behind for whatever reason. And they hear the screeching outside the door, and then the door opens and the octopus people come in. They're right. essentially they're image inducers. If you're using Marvel Comics lingo,
right, true.
Haven't been activated. So that's what they really look like. They're like walking octopi.
Yeah.
And so they come in and they go, oh, wait. And they turn on their things and look like the, you know, 80s art house band or sure. what have you. And then they start talking, communicating normally. And of course, Tim Allen runs in and he's like kidney candy store. He's like, can you believe it? This is great. Yes. You know, all this stuff is so cool. And then Shalhoub just vaporizes, like pops into the room. He's like, that was a hell of a thing.
So good. So good.
And he steps down on the platform and, you know, Tim Allen's like, oh, it's great. You made it. And Tony Shalhoub just turns around and goes, what's going on with them? Oh, nothing. Come on, let's go.
So Tim Allen is all about it.
Oh,
he's like, they need our help. We can be real heroes. Let's fucking do this.
I love that they didn't waste a ton of time like trying to convince him. It's like he had this thing and he's ready to go.
He is ready to go. And it honestly, I mean, it's necessary to like get to the point and get the plot moving.
Right.
But I agree. I liked it. I like that he wasn't an excitable and energetic guy unless he's in front of fans. Right. Otherwise, he's just kind of smarmy and shitty or drunk or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, aside from that. And this, he's like truly sober and excited. He is just fucking pumped to be there.
He is the commander.
Exactly. And he's excited to be there with his crew. And so he's like introducing his crew to the aliens. And so you're getting to meet the aliens who will become the alien main characters or whatever. Mm-hmm. And because they show up and like everybody, they don't really pair off, but there are aliens that kind of show up with the same human characters.
Yeah. And the really interesting thing that they did here is that these aliens, apparently they were like going through some shit however long ago, and they got the broadcast of the show back in the day. And then they based their entire civilization, yes. their entire technological development around this TV show. So the ship they are in is the Protector is the name of the ship, mm-hmm. but they built it like exactly according to specifications based on the show. Yep. And it operates exactly the same way they would move their hands in the show. Yep. And it's just a really interesting concept that mm-hmm. I've never even seen done in Star Trek, where they are just so blatantly inspired right. by, you know, another race like this. And it's just, I thought that was really cool.
It is really cool. And I like that the aliens, the Modians, refer to the TV show as historical documents.
Right. Because they don't understand.
No, they don't know. Yeah. And it's honestly, these aliens, this alien race that the Modians, they're so innocent. They don't mm-hmm. lie. That becomes a thing where they don't lie. There's no deceit. Their enemy, who is Saris, is mm-hmm. a liar and a, you know,
yeah, they're so naive, they don't even understand the concept of lying.
Correct.
Of saying something that yeah. is not true.
So, and as you mentioned, they just base their whole world and technology around this show. Mm-hmm. And so for them, they are meeting like the all-stars of Earth when yeah. they meet these actors.
Of course, this really makes you think too, because let's say that it's been 35 years, mm-hmm. give or take, between, you know, when this show first came on and when the right. events of this movie take place. These aliens like got off their butt and like did intergalactic space travel and all of this, because they're presumably, I mean, they're obviously advanced enough to receive
right.
Electromagnetic waves and communication yes. via, you know, TV shows.
Yes.
But then they just build all this crap in like 30 years and yeah. they turn around their entire civilization. And then you look at us and you're like, oh shit, we haven't done crap yeah, exactly. in 30 years.
And they're essentially refugees. There's only a handful of them left
yeah.
that are on this ship. We learn that later, where it's like Saris has destroyed their whole civilization for a reason that I'm not sure about.
They don't quite say. I assume he is just standard intergalactic conqueror bad guy. Yeah. And that's fine.
Got it.
He doesn't need character development.
We don't need a reason for it. I just couldn't remember if they said it or not. But
no, I think he just kind of did. He just doesn't like them, wants to wipe them out.
And so there are this crew of like, I don't know, 20, 30 of these super naive, hopeful, mm-hmm. really sweet aliens that are just like, oh, we found the people that will save us. So they've put all of their eggs in the basket, which is Tim Allen and Sigourney Weaver yeah. and Alan Rickman are going to save us. They also, in their attempts to mimic human behavior, when they clap instead of horizontally moving their hands, they move them vertically, which is very funny to me, as well as walking where the arms swing at the same rate as your legs. Just, I fucking love it.
Yep. After this, to my knowledge, they go to the bridge and everyone's kind of realizing, oh crap, this is like the show. This is everything is as it is. Mm-hmm. And so Tim Allen just goes to Tommy or Daryl, just, you know, take us out. And he's like, what, I'm supposed to be able to do this? And they're like, it's exactly like you do it on the show.
It's great.
And so you've got the classic Star Trek ship leaving the port, you know, shot. But then it turns out he's drifting too much to the left and scrapes the wall of the space dock.
It's great.
And there's just this really awkward, drawn out, like scraping noise as these they're just trying to get out of this hangar without destroying this thing completely.
It's wonderful because like as they were starting to do that, I was like, oh, yeah, I think something happens where I'm like, oh, he probably crashes into something or whatever. But it is he's just scraping the side.
Yeah.
So it's like. Damage, but not a lot of damage. It's just that high-pitched screeching noise for a significant amount of time. It's very funny.
I am wondering if this is not a joke at the expense of Star Trek, the motion picture. There, I haven't seen it, but I know there is a sequence where they're leaving the dock for the first time in that movie, the new Enterprise.
Yeah.
And it's literally about 5 minutes of them just looking at the ship. Like, I don't think there's hardly any dialogue. It's just the ship. And that's it. And you're let's move it along here.
I'm sure there are a lot of references to the whole Star Trek world,
right?
You know, that I just don't know. So I wouldn't be surprised. Exactly. So
Sarah shows up in his ship.
Yes. And he's shooting things at them.
Yes, he is not happy. And so he starts shooting things at them and they're like, oh crap, we got to leave. And so like, can we go into this, you know,
cloud
right here? And like, that's not a cloud. That is a field of space mines from the last war. And like, oh, crap. And so they end up just going through this thing. They get beat up. They make it to the other side, surprisingly.
Yeah.
The ship is totally busted. But Tony Shalhoub is basically the engineer.
Yes.
He's kind of like the Scotty, but nowhere. Obviously, the inverse personality.
Sure.
So he communicates with the bridge. And he's looking back at the group of three aliens, including Rainn Wilson. And he's like, they're telling me the ship is falling apart. Just FYI, you know, it's okay.
We need beryllium. The beryllium sphere is cracked. He's so good. So they after taking on all of this damage, not only from Saris's ship, but also from riding through a fucking minefield.
Yep.
They realize that's the fuel center of the ship is the beryllium sphere and it is cracked, but they can find a place where they can get additional beryllium.
Yeah. And Sigourney Weaver's like joke in this movie, not really joke, but in the show, apparently her role was to essentially repeat the computer. So they would ask the computer something or they would ask her something. She would ask the computer would say something and she would just repeat it back to the captain.
It's very funny.
And she just kind of ends up doing it as almost like a reflex.
Yes.
And when they're talking about the beryllium sphere is when someone points out and they're like, dude, you're just repeating the computer. She's like, that's what I do. That is my role. I am going to do it.
She's like, I have one fucking job and I'm going to fucking do it, which I'm sure many people have made the joke. And I think I remember seeing it on a TV show or something like that about the woman that was in Star Trek.
Nichelle Nichols.
Yes. That only answered the phone, basically. Like she was just like,
yeah, she was there. And there's another bit that her character is not really notorious for, but one of the more noteworthy things, which we'll talk about later, but just don't let me forget to mention it.
Got it. I do love that. Her character's name is Gwen Sigourney Weaver.
Yep.
She's always fixing her hair and it's great. Sigourney Weaver is so fucking good. So goddamn good.
So they take a shuttle to this planet where they can get one of these beryllium spheres. Mm-hmm. So all the crew is inside this shuttlecraft and they go and it's a pretty desert planet. Lots of rocks, all this.
Sure.
So they see these things at like an old mining facility.
Yes.
So they walk up and then they see these like weird little goblin-esque fish people. They're maybe like 3 feet tall, like blue kind of fin-like ears. And at first, like, oh, they're so cute. They're so cute. And Sam Rockwell's like, no, they're only going to look cute. And then some weird's going to happen. They're going to go crazy and they're going to kill everybody.
Yeah. Because Sam Rockwell is concerned about being killed off first because he's an extra.
He's the red shirt.
Yeah.
So he's just waiting to die.
He has very legitimate concerns.
So, like, one of these wounded, one of these things goes back to the group. And Sigourney Weaver's like, no, they're going to care for it. They're going to treat it. And of course, they like turn into fang beasts and like just totally eat this thing.
Right.
And so I was like, oh, crap, what do we do? And so Tim Allen just basically concocts a plan based on one of their episodes. And Sam Rockwell's like, wait, what episode is that from? He's like, I don't know, 81? He's like, I died in episode 81. Like, exactly. Dude, just don't worry about that. Just do it.
They do. There are a couple of times throughout the movie where they reference like episode whatever. And so they take their cues from that, which is, I don't know. I think it's great because it's quickly, and it also makes sense. It would have felt like maybe kind of like a weaker joke, I think, had the whole Thimodian world not been built upon
exactly
that show. But because it was, they're like, literally, we have the script for how to solve each of these issues because exactly we've shot however many episodes of these. So they are rolling the beryllium back. They get it into the ship, but Tim Allen ends up stuck behind.
Yeah, I think he goes out as a self-sacrifice play.
Yeah.
The way it's shot is kind of weird.
It is
like
weird.
He's laying on the ball, but it doesn't look like the door can close unless he leaves or something.
Yeah, it's kind of strange.
It's strangely shot that segment. But anyway, he ends up on the outside. The ship takes off. They get away without him. And so they knock these little goblin children, knock him out with a rock.
Right.
He wakes up in classic Star Trek, you know, the arena. And so he wakes up next to this really cool looking practical alien effect. It's like a weird pig lizard.
Yes.
Is what they describe it as. Mm-hmm. It's got like maybe we'll say 3.5 feet tall, really fat, just two legs, no arms, lots of buck teeth, spit, you know, multiple weird appendages kind of coming out of its head, eyes and stuff. And so Tim thinks this is what he's supposed to be fighting, like in the classic gladiatorial death match. And so they're up on the ship. They're like, oh, we got to get him out of there. Okay. We just, you know, we got to do it. So we'll use, I forget what their term. It's basically the transporter.
Transport. Yeah. They have to shoot the correct being to transport them. So it's like a lot of aiming that has to happen.
Well, that's part of it too. But they're like, okay, you know, Tony Shalhoub, you knew how to work it in the show. So you do it. They're like, does this thing work? And one of the aliens is like, well, in theory, it works, but we've never tested it on your physiological, you know, properties. And so they're like, okay, we'll do it on the pig thing first. And so they do it on the pig thing. They transport it up. It ends up inside out in this undulating mass of goo, and it just explodes after a few minutes.
Yep.
And Tim Allen's on the comm like saying, what do you mean exploded? What the hell's going on? You got to get me out of there.
It's fucking great.
And,
so after this beast gets transported up and blows up, Tim Allen realizes that that's not what he was going to be fighting. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was this giant rock monster.
Yep.
So this giant 30, 40 tall foot rock monster thing is chasing him around. He's running around and on the ship, like Tony Shalhoub is having a bit of a crisis. He's like, oh my God, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you've got to save him. You got to transport him back up. You got to shoot him with a thing, whatever. And he turns and he sees Missy Pyle's pretty face. And he's like, yeah, fucking got this.
Yeah. Cause he had kind of been giving her looks earlier in the movie, or they had been exchanging the look rather, I should say.
Yeah. They get the weird alien hots for each other. And he does manage to shoot Tim Allen.
Yep. He gets, you know, beamed up properly. Yep. Of course, another running gag is that Tim Allen loses his shirt, which Shatner was always losing his shirt and getting it torn open in the original series.
Yep.
So even Rigman kind of puts a lampshade on it and says, I see you found a way to lose your shirt.
It's fucking great. It was great. The people that were, you know, OG Trekkies, big Trekkies, I would think they would love this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many, you know, like cute, sly references and like in it, but it's at the same time, it is, as you mentioned earlier, it's very respectful to the source material. Saris has taken over the ship and he's also captured a Malthazar, who is our main alien guy, right? Our main character alien, Enrico. And so he's got him pinned down and he is torturing him.
Yes.
And Saris's henchmen bring in Sigourney Weaver and Tim Allen. And yes. Tim Allen is kind of forced to be like, I'm not the guy. I don't know what's up. I'm just an actor.
They're looking for a device called the Omega 13 device, correct, which was mentioned in the episode they showed at the beginning of the movie. It was like a lost episode or something like that. Right. And so these aliens obviously have heard of this device. Like, what the hell is this? I got to have it because Sarah says that's why he wants them. He wants the device. God, we're so stupid. What? He's after them.
Oh, he's after because, the device. Yeah, duh.
The because aliens he does created want it. The device because hello. It was on the show. So anyway,
we're stupid.
Sarah is after. Yeah, we are stupid. we have comprehension skills. So Sarah is after this device and he's, you know, going, hey, what does this thing do to Tim Allen? Every time Tim Allen says, I don't know, because they don't know because it's not real. And so he like shocks, you know, our Malthazar here.
Yeah.
And, you know, eventually Tim Allen just confesses. He says, I'm not the commander. I'm just a guy. So Sarah then kind of gets a little pleasure out of this. He's like, okay. Grabs him, takes him over to Malthazar, and he's like, tell him.
Yeah, which I wrote down. I was like, it feels strange that it is a punishment to have Tim Allen tell Malthazar.
This is a classic bad guy move. He's basically trying to demoralize the guy he's already beaten that much more, saying, right. Oh, this guy you thought was your last hope, he's not even that guy.
Yeah, he's a schmuck.
He is just a guy.
Yeah, you know? Just a fucking guy.
You knew this moment was coming,
sure,
where he was going to have to confess that we're just actors.
We're just actors.
This is real. Damn it, he sells it. I'm sorry. It works.
He sells it, and Enrico.
Yes.
Our
Malthazar there.
He's
like heartbroken.
He's so heartbroken. Truly, it is a touching scene for such a silly movie. I was right. Like, oh my God. He really is just like, he can't comprehend, but then he does kind of comprehend. He's like, oh, you've been lying to us the way that Sarah lies to others.
Because they, for a split second earlier in the movie, are thinking about telling them that, hey, we're just actors.
Right.
But then Malthazar is like, well, if we knew that you guys had anything in common with Sarah, then, you know, he kind of tails off. And they basically stuff it in their pocket.
Yes,
they're like, okay,
exactly.
We're not going to do that.
Exactly.
So obviously this is where it drops. Sarah decides to blow up the ship, kill the aliens, kill all the, I keep forgetting the name, Themodians. Okay. DS, they're similar on a keyboard.
Oh, wait, or is it Thermians? Have I been saying
that
wrong?
I think that was the joke that, anyway.
Oh my God, I didn't write it down.
Anyway, our octopus people, he decides to suffocate all of them instead of just letting them die quickly with the ship.
Yes.
Because he
Which also feels like a reference to something.
It might be.
I don't know. They did it in Spaceballs. Where they sucked all the air.
Where they're taking all the air.
Yeah.
Gosh, I don't want to watch Spaceballs. Then the team break, like, gosh, I'm trying to remember now. Oh, they're going to shoot
Thermians.
The crew. Is it actually Thermians?
I think so.
Anyway, I'm going to say squid aliens. So,
my God, guys, I think I've been saying it wrong this whole fucking episode.
We Thermians. May have been.
Oh my God. I'm not going to edit that. Everybody's just going to have to deal with the fact that I've been saying it wrong the whole episode. I'm sick. Get over it.
Deal with it.
Deal with it.
So the aliens here decide, okay, we're going to kill off, you know, the crew here, or Tim Allen and his gang, by shooting them out the airlock. So they kind of gather them all together. And then Tim Allen starts the classic, you know, I'm going to start a big fight with my coworker here to act as a bit of a distraction so we can make a move.
Yeah.
So him and Alan Rickman kind of start complaining, and they put him in the airlock, and they start throwing punches, and then they make a move, get the alien's gun, you know, and they take the guys out or knock the guys out.
Which is another reference when they're like, yeah, that thing that you did in episode 17 that really pissed me off. And so then it's a knowing look between them.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was great.
So they escape, and then they realize that everyone's getting suffocated.
Yes.
And the ship's going to blow up in 8 minutes.
Right.
So they split up. Yes. So Tim and Sigourney are going to go stop the ship from exploding.
Yes.
And then Alan Rickman's going to go stop the aliens from getting suffocated.
Yes, he's going to
save. And then Daryl's going to go practice driving.
Yes, exactly.
Which basically he just does by watching old episodes and watching how he moves his hands.
It's great.
And then, gosh, what does Tony Shalhoub do?
Tony Shalhoub goes with Missy Pyle to...
Is it just to distract the rest of the evil aliens or to... Do something like that? I know what they do, but I forget if that was their job or if they stumbled into it.
Balls. I don't remember what they do.
Anyway, what they essentially do is...
They go with Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, they go with Sam Rockwell, and they basically beam up the rock monster take out the rest of Saris's crew that's remaining on the ship.
Yep, you're absolutely right. That's what they do.
Again, mm-hmm. I don't remember if that was the original plan, but that's what happened.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think that was the original plan, but Tony Shalhoub was like, I think I have an idea or something like that.
Exactly. They kind of stumbled into that, but that's what they do.
So earlier in the movie, when our whole cast was at the electronic shop opening, when we first meet, or no, sorry, the second time that we see Justin Long runs into Tim Allen. They bump into each other, do the classic swap a thing that looks exactly like another thing. So they're, what do you call it?
Communicator.
They get swapped. The prop one for an actual one. So Tim Allen's like, okay, we got to figure out how to stop the ship from blowing up. And, you know, how do we do that? How do we get there? What do we do? I know who's going to help us. Justin Long.
Yeah. Because of this super technical question that Justin Long was asking him earlier in the movie.
Exactly.
At the
so they get on the comm. They call Justin Long. He's very funny, very cute.
Yeah.
He does a bit where his mom, who is Susan from Seinfeld that died from licking the envelopes.
Is that who it was? That's I knew her. She looked familiar.
Yep, that was her. She's got short hair in this.
Yeah. All right.
Wait, the envelopes or the stamps? I don't know.
One it was envelopes.
Yeah, envelopes. So that's his mom. She does a bit where she's like, you've got to take out the trash. And he's like, I'll fucking do it in a minute, mom. Well, he doesn't say that, but he's like, I'll do it in a minute, mom. Yep. He gets a call from Tim Allen.
Hey, we need to shut down this. How do we do it? And so he's like, goes onto his computer, yep. pulls up like the schematics, and they're like, well, how do we do this? And he's like, okay, well, I got a buddy.
Yes.
So hold on. So he basically weaponizes his fandom buddies.
It's great.
Like over video chat, of course, 1999 video chat and all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, what do you have on this? And he's like, oh, well, I've only got, I forget all the techno babble.
Yeah, because
they're
like, basically
they
only have
forth.
The plans for the levels this or this. So-and-so has got levels through 8 through 10 or whatever.
Exactly.
It is.
So all these guys have got the pretty much the blueprints of the ship. Identified or memorized. And so they're going to walk them through how to get to the abort button for the
self-destruct. Right. And so as Justin Long is walking them through, they're going into all these ridiculous situations that would only be made up for a TV show.
Of course.
So for example, the chompers, this giant room where giant metal hammers, pistons are banging against each other in, you know, left to right, up to down and a different sort of
intervals and patterns and so on.
Exactly.
It's basically like a video game level where you'd have to go through one of those rooms on a conveyor belt.
And Sigourney Weaver is like, what the fuck is this? Actually, that was in the notes where like there are a couple of times.
She says, fuck this, but they obviously didn't redo the take. They just dubbed over it with screw this. And you could tell.
It is very obvious. There was that scene. There was another scene too, where there was another thing where in order to get a PG rating, they took that out. But it was very funny because she was like, well, fuck this. And it was like, you didn't say that.
You didn't say screw this.
So they end up jumping through and then there's fire at the end of it. And so they get through all these chompers and they get through the fire. In the meantime,
hold on. We have skipped slightly something important.
What?
You know, they go, Justin Long is guiding Tim and Sigourney through this area.
Yeah.
And Justin Long's like, I can't believe it. I really wish I was there. And they're like, well, it's just, you know, a fan and crap. He's like, no, you're at the heart of the Omega 13 device.
Oh, that's right.
And they go, what? And they look up and it's this really weird kind of molecular giant CGI effect. And like, okay, well, what the hell does this thing do? And he's like, well, there's a bunch of different theories. Some think it could blow up the universe in a matter of 13 seconds. Another think that it could like reverse time by 13 seconds.
Yes.
And there's a bit of dialogue. It's kind of on the nose. It like basically broadcasts what's going to happen.
Yes, for sure.
But she's like, 13 seconds. Why? That's kind of a small amount of time.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? And Tim Allen basically just says, oh, you know, you can do it to undo one mistake.
Exactly.
And you're like, okay, that's Chekhov's gun has been loaded.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
That's coming back.
Very obviously. But it's fine because the movie is enjoyable. So you're just like,
yes, exactly.
Whatever. I mean, anybody could be like, okay, it's clear that there's going to be a mistake and he's going to have to go back 13 seconds or whatever. So in the meantime, Tony Shalhoub and Missy Pyle make out after they teleport up the rock monster. It is.
And he realizes that he's really into squid shit.
Yeah, he is.
Because they're kissing while she's in kind of her human guise.
Yeah.
And then you see the tentacles trying to start to come up his back and press on his head. And he looks at it and he gets this like, oh my, look on his face.
Into it. He
and
is into
Sam
it.
Rockwell is grossed out.
But still continues to watch, which
of
I find to
does.
Be funny. So these are our crews that have split up. So
Alan Rickman is the one we have not discussed.
And that's what I was just getting to.
Sorry.
So before that, Tim Allen and Sigourney Weaver get to basically the plunger that always shows up or the button every show in order to stop the self-destruct thing.
Yep.
They try it. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
And they have a moment where they're like, oh, fuck, this is it. And so they embrace and they have just like a brief moment of connection where it's like they maybe want to say about their unrequited feelings for each other, and they hug and nothing happens. And they look and then they're like, fuck, it always stops at 1 second.
Yeah, because they pressed it at like, what, 20 or 30 seconds left, and it ran down to one and then stopped.
Exactly. So they kind of roll their eyes and whatever. But in the meantime, because that has happened, the ship hasn't blown up, Alan Rickman and his alien buddy that he's made managed to get the door open, right? So they have saved.
Yes.
Yes. So they have saved all of the other Thermians, not the Modians. I don't know why I fucking came up with that. But all these other aliens that the oxygen or whatever was being sucked out of the room, they've saved them. But one of Saris's guys comes around the corner, shoots Alan Rickman's alien friend.
Yes.
And he's dying. And he and Alan Rickman holds him and the music swells and he says
the line.
The line by Grobthar's hammer. You will be avenged. Mm-hmm. Did Eden cry? Eden fucking cried. I did. It was so sweet.
It was good.
Alan Rickman. I think that's probably part of it. Perhaps
possibly.
If it wasn't an actor that I love so much and an actor that, you know, hasn't already passed, like maybe right. I wouldn't have cried, but Eden definitely cried.
Yeah, yeah, right. So Rickman steps out as this alien that shot his buddy is kind of reloading or whatever. Yeah. And Rickman's got the crazy look. He's got the crazy eyes. He's going to go for it until he goes and tackles the guy.
Exactly. Exactly. And I wrote, now Gwen is running around with her tits out.
Yeah, there was a scene missing here because her zipper is further down and her shirt's tore up significantly
more. It's a
lot.
She might as well not be wearing a top.
So I'm curious, there was in Star Trek V a scene, it's kind of known as the fan dance.
Okay.
Where Nichelle Nichols or Shatner had Nichelle Nichols, because he directed Star Trek V, like dress up in this really risque outfit and do this weird fan dance to try and distract some aliens or something. I'm wondering if there wasn't some sort of homage scene to that and they cut it.
I mean, maybe.
Because that's the only reason I could think of that her top would be significantly more.
Yeah, because it wasn't like that when she and Tim Allen were having the moment by the button.
No, it was after the button or either right around that time.
Yeah, but you're
there
right.
Was something
we don't
that happened.
See it. It's just all of a sudden she pops up.
Just
and
all of a sudden boobs and you're like, oh, okay. Well,
you're like, what up, girl?
I'm not going to complain.
She looked great. I go, looking great. And I get the irony, but still. Yeah.
Let's see.
So the mines blow up the bad guy's ship.
Yes, because, okay, they get control of the ship again. So they go back to the minefield. Yep. Yep. Good guys get control of the ship. They're going to the minefield. Tommy knows how to drive now, or Daryl, whichever name we want to use. And so they're going through and Tim Allen says, hey, can you get closer to these mines? Because they determined earlier that they were magnetic.
Yes.
And they're like, okay. So essentially they get a bunch of these mines to go behind them and then they play chicken with Saris's ship.
Yeah.
And Saris thinks they're just like playing chicken sure. straight up. You know, he's like, you think I'm going to back down? Like, I'm like way more powerful than you. And then Tim Allen's like, well, you're not towing a bunch of mines. So they basically move out of the way and the mines go just demolish Saris's ship. And there's a shot of Saris running toward the camera off the bridge.
Yeah.
Right as the ship explodes. And I said, okay, he's not dead. He's coming back.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep. So the ship blows up. Everyone's celebrating. Everyone's doing this.
They're
Tony
on the bridge.
Shalhoub pops up on the bridge.
Yes.
He's clearly looking a little sketch.
Yep.
And then he pulls a gun out and Tim Allen's like, dude, what are you doing? And like, come on. It just like he thinks he's fucking around.
Right.
Well, all of a sudden it's Saris and he starts shooting everybody.
Yes. So he's shooting all of our human heroes.
Yes.
He's shooting Malthazar. He's shooting everyone.
Yep.
It's a massacre.
Yep. And then all of a sudden, Chekhov's gun fires. Mm-hmm. Omega, Tim Allen has them fire the Omega device, reverses time 13 seconds. Right. And so he jumps Tony Shalhoub when he comes up onto the bridge. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what the hell are you doing? Because his, you know, image inducer, for lack of a better term, hasn't phased out yet. But then they are able to knock him out.
Yep.
You know, before he hurts anybody.
Absolutely.
Him being Saris.
I don't know if it is Saris or if it is Malthazar, but somebody says deception, lies. Who is that?
I don't know.
Oh, well, the reason why I wrote it down is because Forrest Whitaker plays a character in Rogue One.
nope. in the movie.
The other one.
No, he did play a character in Rogue One.
Doesn't he say something about deception? Lies.
I don't know. I saw that movie once and I wasn't that crazy about it.
Really? It's pretty good.
I mean, it's pretty, but the characters are just cardboard. And that's a problem with Gareth Edwards overall.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I did enjoy the movie, but I think you totally are right.
The Vader sequence is probably the best part of it. And that's like at the very end. And it's just Vader killing a bunch of guys.
Yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah.
We'll have to rewatch that.
No, sidebar. A sidebar concluded. So anyway, now that Saris has been, you know, incapacitated, everyone's getting ready to go home. They're going back through the wormhole, yes. what have you.
They're going
to
drop him off at Earth.
Yep. And so they say, okay, you know, you guys have to go home. We're going to separate the ship and we're going to go this way. You guys go that way. Everyone has their goodbyes.
Yes.
And so the ship separates. Our crew gets back to Earth.
They've been guided back by fireworks led by Justin Long and his nerd buddies on the ground. It's a very cute scene.
Yeah, they do it into the parking lot of this convention center.
It's great.
I mean, it's silly, but you're silly. Okay, it works. So they help the ship land. It smashes into this convention center, like comes right up to this stage where they were introducing or trying to introduce the Galaxy Quest crew, which kind of rewinding a little bit. You see when Justin Long is bringing all the Roman candles downstairs, his parents are watching a news report on the convention. Like,
yeah.
I get that they had to tell the audience that,
sure.
oh, the news is concerned that the people are, nobody would have cared.
No, there
would
never
be network news.
There would never be a news story that's like, washed up actors don't show up at Comic-Con, you know, like that would never be a news story.
Exactly. Not certainly not on broadcast television.
No.
So anyway,
but the ship comes down, it crashes into the convention center. And I said, and likely murders a lot of fanboys. Kevin McCullough from Kids in the Hall is the.
Yeah, I knew I've seen him before.
Isn't it Kevin McCullough?
I forget his name.
Oh, fuck. Pause. Kevin McDonald. Not Kevin McCullough.
Well, you were close-ish.
Kevin McDonald, who is Canadian, who was in Kids in the Hall. I was correct.
Yes. That is correct.
That is correct. I'm sorry that it took me so long to get that out because it was unimportant whatsoever, but I do like to see surreptitious Canadians. I do like to be right about things. So we shall continue. Yes. So they crash into the convention. Kevin from Kids in the Hall is there.
Yes. He thinks it's all part of the act, even though there's no possible way this could have been part of the act. So the door opens up. All these fanboys are wondering what the hell's going on. There's steam. Yes. It's destruction everywhere or whatever. And then Tommy buzz, you know, kind of stumbles out.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, and it's blah, 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 blah.
Yes. So the crew stumbles out one by one and they erupt.
Just treat it like a convention entrance, like a really highfalutin convention entrance.
Amazing.
And of course, Tim Allen comes out last and everyone does a cheer. And then Saris pops out. Tim Allen does a roll, which they had made a joke about.
They're
like, does that really help?
Yeah.
And so he rolls, disintegrates Saris with his laser gun. The audience cheers.
They go fucking wild.
And then Tim Allen kind of walks up, takes a little of the glory, and then turns around and has everybody else come up front too.
Yeah, so they all walk up front, so they're no longer in the back. He also makes out with Gwen. He dips her and kisses her.
Which is good that they didn't like throw that in at the button. Like normally that's when that would have happened.
Sure.
But they saved it, and I think that's good, because otherwise it would have been like, okay, you don't need two dramatic kisses.
Yeah, it was fine. And the very end of the movie, we see that they get a reboot.
They get next generationed.
They get next gen.
There was a lot of next gen love in that little introduction, and I loved
it. It was great. And Guy, Sam Rockwell, gets a leading role.
Yep, he's a regular.
He's a regular.
And then the movie ends.
And then the movie ends. Wow. So, how did you feel about it?
It was so good. It was very good. It definitely shifts, like, because at first, you know, it does do the parody of the original crew. And, and that kind of thread does carry through. Sure. But after all, it just kind of transforms into essentially being a Star Trek movie.
Yes.
In the best way. Because if you honestly were ranking this in the pantheon of Star Trek films, this would be one of the better ones.
Good.
Well, I'm concerned.
Yes.
It would be one of the better ones.
Man, so did your wife watch this with you?
No, she did not. I asked her if she wanted to, but she passed.
Has she seen it before?
maybe when it came out. I'm not exactly sure.
She watches Next Gen with you.
Oh yeah, we were big Star Trek people.
So I figured she would have enjoyed it as well. Yeah,
I'm sure she'd enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So I'll probably make her watch it sometime. This will be one that I'm probably going to have to buy here.
I think so. This to me feels like a rewatchable.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's a lot of funny stuff. It's, you know, again, as I said many times throughout this podcast, there's so many references and homages to the original Star Trek mm-hmm. that like I personally don't get, but I appreciate the fact that they're in there. I love it.
Yeah. It's just really good, really enjoyable, especially if you're a fan of anything really like this mm-hmm. in kind of nerd ephemera. It's not just about Star Trek fandom, though that's obviously the primary inspiration right. for this. But in terms of just how fandoms behave yes. and act and all that stuff, it's about any number of them.
And
so
I think
it's very inclusive in that regard.
It is. And it's very respectful of that.
It is.
That fandom.
I mean, they help save the day. That's like the dream.
It is.
For the fans to help save
Absolutely.
The day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, now we see why David Mamet listed this as one of his four perfect movies. So.
Right. It's very good. It's just, it's got heart.
It does have heart. Well, mm-hmm. I cried twice. So the first time was when Alan Rickman delivered his famous line.
Yep.
The second time is when Malthazar is declared to be the captain of a ship.
Oh, yes. Ugh,
stop it.
It's good stuff.
I love that stuff. All right. Before we move to the pitches, let's rank our top six. Can you rank our crew?
Oh, goodness.
Best to worst offhand real quick.
I hate to say worse because they were all pretty good.
No, they were all pretty good.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say at the bottom, I'm putting Sam Rockwell.
Oh, okay. See, it's either him or Tommy mm-hmm. at the bottom. They're the top two spots.
I don't think Tommy's given a lot to do.
Exactly. It's not his fault as the actor or the character. Mm-hmm. It's just the script.
Yeah.
We'll say Tommy and Sam Rockwell are at the bottom.
I think they're
six,
at the bottom.
Whichever order.
Yeah. I think they're about equal. Mm-hmm. Truthfully, I don't know. One and two, neck and neck, Alan Rickman and Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah, it's close, man.
They're real fucking close.
I'm probably going to have to go Shalhoub just because he made me laugh more.
You're going Shalhoub. I obviously cried at Alan Rickman. I may have to go Alan.
Right.
I'm going to go Alan, Tony, Sigourney, Tim Allen, Daryl, Sam Rockwell.
All right. That's a good list. Yeah. Let's go with it.
Okay. Perfect. Excellent. Top six list.
So any other notes that you wanted to say before we moved on to the pitches? I've got a couple things. Honestly.
Yeah, go ahead. I had so many notes at the top.
There was just a funny line when they were looking for the sphere on the planet and the little goblin children. Mm-hmm. When they realize that they're being chased and they're trying to roll this thing away. Sigourney Weaver just goes, let's get out of here before one of those things kills Guy.
That was great.
And then I remember there being talking about Sigourney's top and how it got disheveled, for lack of a better term.
Right.
I remember when the trailers came out, there's a very, not really risque because it's a PG movie, but just a very, sensuous, I guess, for lack of a better term, shot of Sigourney Weaver in that trailer. And I'm like, am I having a Mandela effect? Did I misremember that?
Right.
No, it's in there because I watched the original trailer again.
Sure.
So I think that's part of the scene that was cut that it would explain why her top was the way it was towards
the
end of the movie.
Got it.
Once again, there's nothing there because it's just the also starring Sigourney Weaver portion of the trailer.
But
the visual is definitely something you didn't see in the film.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, as much as I'm like, okay, we get it. I get that it was a running gag.
Right.
So it made sense because that all the things that happened on the show on Earth mm-hmm. were happening in their real life.
Yeah.
On this alien ship. So I get that that's...
It's probably a deleted scene on the Blu-ray that if I was more industrious, I would have just bought and looked at.
Well, when you buy it after this and watch it, give
we'll
us
have
an
a follow-up.
Yeah. We'll have an update.
Okay.
I would like to know if they've got some...
Because I am very interested in Sigourney Weaver's cleavage.
I think we all are. I mean, she's looking pretty fucking fly in this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's see. This was 1999. Sigourney Weaver would have been... No way. She was born in 49?
Yeah, so I guess she was 50.
Fuck, she looked fucking hot.
Yes, as a teenage boy when it came out, I definitely agree.
I mean, she still looks amazing.
Right.
But like... Dang, she didn't look 50.
No, not at all. It's the bleach blonde thing.
I don't know.
Probably
I
had something to do with it.
I got to stop bitching about being almost 40. She's 50 and she looks great.
But yeah, those were just the two additional notes I had. Well, I'll definitely follow up on that if and when I grab it.
Please do. I would be interested to hear about any deleted scenes and stuff like that. I thought all of it was great. Mm-hmm. All of it was great. Miss Alan Rickman a lot.
Yep.
Fucking. This was wonderful. And for anybody, I'm sure most people that enjoy Tony Shalhoub are enjoying him in the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel series. He is quite wonderful in that as well, per usual. And now that brings us to the second and final segment of the show, the pitches.
The pitches.
This is the segment of the show where one of us, this week it's me, will blind pitch to Sam three movies. He will select one of those movies, and that is what we will watch next week. This Love list it. Of movies has been inspired by this week's movie, Galaxy Quest. Sam, are you ready?
Yes, I am.
Here we go. Number one. A chiaroscuro thriller showcases unrequited love between a successful and misunderstood woman and a younger, ambitious man. Beautiful residential architecture steeped in infamy stands as the setting for this shocking talkie.
Okay.
Number two. Lady Luck falls on dead eyes in a story set in the Southern California desert. Disappointment and failure meet success and opportunity as the lives of three hot blondes serendipitously intersect.
Okay.
Number three. A man's exploration to find out who he really is leads to a challenging and concerning journey of self-discovery. Will he find himself grounded or allow himself room to fly?
All right.
I know.
I don't know chiaroscuro. I am a plebeian. I apparently just don't know.
I can tell you what that word is. Chiaroscuro is it's a style of, it also applies to a aesthetic of a film, but it was a style of painting that was characterized by really deep black shadowy parts highlighted by light parts where it's just like very dramatic looking. So like chiaroscuro in film is like, oftentimes
film noir and stuff like that.
Yeah, you think of that. Yeah, where it's like dark, dark, dark shadows contrasted against bright, bright, bright lights.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So that's the first one. Do you want me to read them again?
Sure, why not?
Okay, number one. A chiaroscuro thriller showcases unrequited love between a successful and misunderstood woman and a younger, ambitious man. Beautiful residential architecture steeped in infamy stands as the setting for this shocking talkie.
Mm-hmm.
Number two. Lady Luck falls on dead eyes in a story set in the Southern California desert. Disappointment and failure meet success and opportunity as the lives of three hot blondes serendipitously intersect.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you proud of me for saying serendipitously?
Yeah, in one take.
Pretty fucking killer. All right, number three. A man's exploration to find out who he really is leads to a challenging and concerning journey of self-discovery. Will he find himself grounded or allow himself room to fly?
Well, I'm not going to lie. I have no idea on any of these.
Really?
Yeah.
Do any of them sound interesting, or are there any that you're automatically like, nope, not that one?
My inner adolescent is leaning towards the hot blondes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we did watch a movie with a hot blonde in it.
Exactly. That, I knew that's where you got that. Yeah, for whatever reason, when you said Hot Blondes, even though you said three and there's only two in the movie I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
But Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion, obviously
great
that's
great movie.
That's obviously not what you're referencing.
It's not, but goddamn, what a good movie. Alan Cumming is in that movie.
I know.
Fucking wild. And Janine Garofalo.
Yep.
Oh, I mean, fuck. Yeah. Somebody put that in a pitch. That's great. Damn, that's good.
When's the last time you saw Mira Sorvino?
Well, you know, she got fucking axed because of Harvey Weinstein.
That son of a bitch.
Yeah, he's a fucking disgusting human.
Yeah, pig indeed.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one, for
first one
reason,
is a thriller about unrequited love.
Mm-hmm.
Second one is about disappointment and failure and three hot blondes, success and opportunity. And the third one is about a man's exploration to find out who he really is.
Let's do B.
B.
Italy towards the hot blondes.
Lady Luck falls on dead eyes in a story set in the Southern California desert. Disappointment and failure meet success and opportunity as the lives of three hot blondes serendipitously intersect. This movie is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, I never saw that.
Well, I was hoping you hadn't.
Well, there we go.
So our three hot blondes, Leonardo DiCaprio, Brad Pitt, Margot Robbie.
Okay.
Hot, hot, hot blondes. Dead Eyes. Think you know who I'm fucking talking about.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I was wondering if you would catch that.
No. Obviously, I didn't.
Mm-hmm. And it's set, obviously, in Hollywood, Southern California. So our first movie about the thriller that showcases unrequited love between a successful woman and a younger man is the classic Sunset Boulevard.
Never saw that either.
I knew that you probably hadn't seen that. It's from 1950. It is a wonderful fucking movie. It's kind of an outlier in this group.
Okay.
The third one, about a man's exploration to find out who he really is and self-discovery, Birdman.
I never saw that either. I would have been threesome.
I have seen Sunset Boulevard. I've seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I have not seen Birdman, which is why I was like, oh, maybe this would be a good opportunity to see it.
Okay.
But all of these movies are about failed actors.
Right.
So that was our theme for this week.
Very nice. Very nice.
All right. So next week we're going to have a Tarantino movie. Once upon a time in Hollywood. So you got to block out 3 hours to watch this fucking movie. I got to tell you.
Okay. I might split it over two nights. We'll see what happens.
You may have to. It is a long one. Let's actually look that up right now. It is.
I know some of the very brief, you know, abouts.
It's good. I think you probably will enjoy it. I watched it with mom and dad, actually. 2 hours and 41 minutes.
It's like, no, we're some Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, World's End, right? Or whatever.
You know what? This is not a spoiler alert, but kind of like I said, for the Pirates movies, there's some time I think we can cut out.
Like, makes sense.
Yeah. So
I can see Tarantino being a little indulgent.
Exactly. So hopefully, I mean, those episodes that we recorded for the Pirates movies that are longer, just because there is so much plot, those are long episodes. So like the episode, went out this week. It'll be in the past when this comes out. But it was an hour and 50 minutes.
Jeez.
I know.
Not that much shorter than the actual damn movie.
I know, right? And I tried to cut out shit, but it was just that was plot, so steeped in plot. Yeah. But this one, this Tarantino movie, I think we can hop through a lot of the plot relatively quickly. All right. So next week, it'll be Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay. Interesting.
Thanks, everybody, for listening this week. If you would like to follow us or find us on social media, feel free to search for us on Instagram at Storage Room Movie Boom. On Twitter at Storage Room Pod. And you can send us an OG email if you'd like to just chat with us a little bit at storageroompod@gmail.com. Also, don't forget on any of your podcast subscription services to subscribe, to rate, and review. That would be very helpful.
Yes, it would.
All right. Thanks, everybody, so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.